2 days before Hamas's October 7th attack on southern Israel and the start of Israel's assault on Gaza. Visit democracynow.org to see all of our coverage of Israel and Gaza. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Sharif Abdelkaddous, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, and Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Pugh, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Do you love music but don't have the energy to find new stuff? Can't decide whether you want to hear indie rock or hip hop, electronic music or singer-songwriters? Then tune into Another Late Night every first Saturday at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Community Radio. Or stream online at kboo.fm/anotherlatenight, where we've got it all.
Hello, the KBOO Evening News is off tonight for Memorial Day. This is an interview with organizers from Healthcare for All Oregon. Thanks for listening to KBOO Community Radio.
This is for you, Daddy. I took my love and I took it down.
You're listening to KBOO Radio. My name is Emma Lugo, and I'm here today with Maribeth Healy and Valdez Bravo from Healthcare for All Oregon. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you so much.
Great, thank you. So let's start, if we can, first of all, by Valdez and Maribeth, each of you telling us a little bit about yourself and telling us a little bit about Healthcare for All Oregon, and then we'll get started talking about the state of Oregon's healthcare system.
Sure. How about I'll introduce myself and then Maribeth, and then we'll talk a little about Healthcare for All Oregon and what we're up to. Hey, everybody. My name is Valdez Bravo. I'm president of Healthcare for All Oregon. I use he, him, his pronouns. And a little bit about me. I'm an Oregon native. I grew up in Salem, Oregon. Born at OHSU, but grew up in Salem. Kind of a blue collar household, and I ended up joining the Army as kind of my ladder of opportunity to see the world and, you know, do service to my country. I served in the Army for about 8 years as a 91 Alpha medical equipment repair technician. Came home after the Army as a young buck sergeant, got out, worked at OHSU for a minute, felt like a salmon because I was back at the point where it all started. But I ended up working at the Veterans Hospital, the Portland VA, for about 18 years. And then now I'm at the Multnomah County Health Department and as the deputy director over there. But definitely here in an individual capacity, my capacity as president of Healthcare for All Oregon. Outside of that, I'm also a board certified fellow in the American College of Healthcare Executives. And I do work with another C3 doing professional learning for healthcare executive types. And I really feel like those intersections of the CEO executive leadership crowd and the Healthcare for Oregon crowd are a really good lens for me to navigate a lot of these changes that we're seeing here in Oregon and healthcare nationally. And I'll hand it off to Mary Beth.
Thanks, Valdez. Thanks again, Emma, for having us. So my name is Mary Beth Healy. I am the still new executive director of Healthcare for All Oregon, and I use she, her pronouns. And I, I came out to Oregon. I've been doing healthcare advocacy and general troublemaking since I was about 10 years old. And after the 2000 election, I was in Florida at that time as the state council director for the Service Employees International Union. And after, 37 days of ballot counting and chads and chaos, I wasn't quite sure that I could trust the ballot anymore. So I had an opportunity to come out to Oregon to start and lead Oregonians for Health Security in the very early 2000s and worked to educate and advocate for cost containment measures, coverage measures, and accountability within the healthcare industry. And so I think about, the 20 years from when I first came to Oregon to do health reform and where we are today. And there actually had been a ballot measure in that year for a single payer healthcare system, which did not obviously succeed. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in the situation we are now. But what has happened in that intervening 20 years is both is a mixed story, right? So on the good side, Oregon has done an incredible job in covering people, in expanding access, in working or striving to view healthcare through an equity lens. And we've made some real progress on some of the disparities in our healthcare system. But when you look at the chaos of our system and the costs, when I first came here in 2002, average family premiums, Emma, were about $12,000 a year. And today, they're over $20,000 a year. And more importantly, workers or employees are paying about 30% of their salary to pay for their health care. So we know at Healthcare for All Oregon that there is a better way to do it that is more equitable, more cost efficient, and certainly universal so that every Oregonian can get the care they need when they need it at a cost they can afford. So yeah, I'm super excited to be here. When I saw this opportunity, I was like, oh, feels very full circle to me. And I think, again, because of the work that has happened that we'll get into more deeply, specifically that HCAO has been doing, particularly in the last 10 years, really sets Oregon on the path to be the first state in the country to actually achieve a universal, publicly funded, equitable healthcare system. So I'm very pleased to be here and so excited to be able to have this conversation with you, Emma.
Thanks. And I know at least, I can't remember which one of you said that one of you has some KBOO roots going back a ways.
Oh, yeah. This is Valdez. My wife, Marie Lowe, had a show with some colleagues called APA Compass on KBOO for many years.
Yeah.
I think it was about 15 years, which is an Asian Pacific American Affairs Friday show over there at mm-hmm. KBOO. And it was a great opportunity.
Yeah. And go ahead, Emma. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Mary Beth.
No, and I was just going to say, as do I, I kind of feel like I might actually be back home in Oregon because I'm back on KBOO. But I co-hosted Labor Radio for quite a while, both with Ken Allen of AFSCME, Jamie Partridge, rock star of the letter carriers, and Don McIntosh, the editor of the Labor Press. So yeah, I so enjoy radio, love KBOO, and it was one of the things when I got back to Florida, I was like, gang, people, we need to try to get some community radio going to get the voices of the people out into the public sphere. So again, I'm very appreciative of KBOO and the work you do.
Thank you. So let's talk about the state of Oregon's healthcare system. Healthcare for All Oregon is doing amazing organizing, and I always get all of your emails, but I just didn't realize that the for-profit system is such a mess right now. What's going on with Oregon's healthcare system?
So let me do a little bit of an intro, you know, just because of what we've been fighting for and why we see Healthcare for All Oregon's mission is so like tied to this like landscape that we're seeing right now as a preventative measure. You know, so like Healthcare for All Oregon, you know, we're if folks are listening at home, we can be found at hcao.org, www.hcao.org. And, you know, we've been around and fighting these battles for over 20 years, about 23 years old, and we're a 501c3. And our mission is to really educate about and advocate for an equitable, affordable, comprehensive, high quality, publicly funded universal healthcare system that will improve the lives of individuals, families, and communities across Oregon, 59 states. And so, you know, obviously our vision is, publicly funded universal healthcare, everybody in, nobody out. That's our motto at Healthcare for Oregon, because even in a state like Oregon, which does have the Oregon Health Plan, you know, about 1 in 3 people are really truly covered. And even if you have Oregon Health Plan, once you get into specialty care, you need some special radiology, you know, you're just unable to get that care. So we've been fighting for publicly funded healthcare, kind of a single payer type system for many years. And I think we'll talk a little bit later in the program about some of our successes. But now more than ever, we're seeing the need for this, because what Rick's talking about, Rick Stagenborg, my fellow former VA friend, is that we are seeing this consolidation of healthcare, not only in Oregon, but in America, where more systems, you know, a lot of the standalone units, you know, you got like Sky Lakes out there and Klamath Falls, and you got, you know, out in La Grande, you do have standalone hospitals that are still kind of their own thing. But more and more you see the big systems, you know, integrated delivery systems. And you have these private equity groups like United Healthcare using the guys Optum to come in and acquire them and to buy them up. And the reason that these consolidations are so troubling for us is because, especially when you have like a private equity group who has a profit motive and not a people motive, when they come in, you know, they acquire practice, and it can be under the guise of we're helping and we're injecting capital into the system, and we hear words like economies of scale, and this, you know, this local Oregon practice is going to get access to all kind of resources because you're now partnering, you know, or being acquired by a national group. But inevitably what happens is you have a profit motive that's guiding every decision. It's not a patient care motive, it's a profit motive. And what that looks like is you end up having changes in care or providers that are not feeling empowered. And that is not what they signed up for. They're not able to get their patients the care they need. And so they leave, which reduces access, which reduces quality of care. You see the businesses cutting back and making cuts because they're not profitable enough. They're profitable and they're making it, but they're not profitable enough. So you get physicians and providers having to see more patients, huge patient panels, thousands of patients on a panel. And that cuts down on access because now it's longer. You got to wait for an appointment to see your doc because they're seeing so many people because the doc to the left and the right of them left. Or you see, we've heard stories about compromises in the supplies and things like sutures and whatnot that are cheaper to buy for the big company, but not evidence-based, or they don't have the great outcomes in terms of keeping patients safe and healthy. And so a lot of times the providers just aren't feeling empowered to do anything about that. It's happening to them. You know, physicians and providers have that mantra of first do no harm. And when they're, you know, having to operate in a system where they can't see their patients and when they're not able to get them the care, they're having to fight with insurance companies to get them the care, or they're having to use substandard equipment and supplies, that flies in the face of how they were trained or their Hippocratic oath and causes cognitive dissonance. And they leave, and maybe they leave Oregon. And just more and more what we're seeing is these consolidations are reducing quality of care and access to care. And I would see, Mary Beth, if you wanted to add anything to that piece.
Well, I guess I would say, too, that just for Dr. Stagenborg, he's in Corvallis, right, which over the last 3 months has just been experiencing this corporatization threat firsthand, but it's certainly not the only community in our state where the, you know, private equity or large insurance firms are coming in to really purchase and take over our healthcare system. And, you know, even before this very troubling trend started happening, you know, we were seeing costs increase. We were seeing, you know, a dysfunctional system, because here we are in America, the richest country in the world. We spend over $4 trillion a year on our healthcare. So that equals $13,000-something for every single American. Now, I'm not a mathematician, but here's what I do know. When every other industrialized country, I could say civilized country in the world, can provide a national health plan for their people at $3,000 or less, I think that America can do a lot better than what we're doing now. And it's been so both empowering, exciting, and inspiring to see the work that Healthcare for All Oregon has done over the last 10 years to really help shift the conversation around a universal, equitable, and publicly funded healthcare system. So, you know, in, you know, I had talked about, you know, early work trying to hold the industry accountable, expanding access, you know, doing some work around disparities and trying to create a more equitable healthcare system. The advent of the, you know, coordinated care organizations, which were supposed to be this tremendous tool to focus on patients, not profits. But now we're seeing, even in that vein, a lot of that kind of corporate mentality taking over, where patients, you know, really aren't, don't have a say. And so as we think about where we are today and how dysfunctional the system is, you know, Healthcare for All Oregon has been taking the lead, really, you know, starting with Valdez was at the 2019 session with the 770 task force, which really was a large group of a broad swath of diverse Oregonians coming together to just investigate, Emma, could we indeed create a single payer system in the state of Oregon? What would that look like, and what would it cost? And what the task force report determined is that indeed Oregon could create a single payer system, and it would save the state $1 billion. Now, if that's not, you know, the impetus to move forward and take a look at how we can create a better healthcare system, I don't know what is. And that kind of leads us to, you know, again, these are the broader reforms versus just the corporate takeover aspect, but they're very connected, because we can't have a simplified, equitable, and affordable healthcare system if we have profit driven entities running the show. And Valdez, I know you have something to say around this.
Yeah, I mean, when I came into working with Healthcare for Oregon in 2018, that was the big thing that was ramping up. And just kudos to Senator James Manning out of Lane County, the Eugene area. He really has been a legislative champion for, like, just like really putting, you know, when you go to the legislature, you get so many chips to play in sponsoring bills and pushing for things. He really put all his chips in on this issue, on universal healthcare. And so, like Mary Beth said, Senate Bill 770 got passed in 2019, really like stood up that joint task force on universal healthcare. And if you go to our website at hco.org, click on the legislation tab, you can read all about this. You know, it's a very comprehensive document. But this, what I love about this is this joint task force on universal healthcare is, rather than, you know, getting a small group of smart people in a room and, you know, scratching their chins and figuring out what this should look like, they invested years. Like, it was originally going to be like 2 years, but because of COVID, the work kind of got drawn out. And just going all over the state and talking to technical advisory groups and consumer groups and patients and providers and, like, all the different partners that are in, you know, that touch our healthcare system, even those insurance folks. And they basically put all this information together, like Mary Beth said, in that pack, and said, you know, we could go from a system where we've got one in three people kind of in the system to everybody, everyone you know in Oregon, every person you know, regardless of status, income status, veteran status, Native American status, of age, everyone would be in, and we could save $1 billion. So that is compelling. And then what they did is, so now this report, it's up on our website. Then what was awesome, Senator Manning comes back again. He's not done. He comes back again, and he puts his chips in to get a governance board, a universal health plan governance board created, and to that would basically take this report, this comprehensive document. I like to like all the pieces in the Erector set, and to bring it together and build a working model of what this universal health plan in Oregon will look like. So when, you know, people ask, how much is it going to cost and what's covered? Is it covered dental? Yes. Is it covered vision? Yes. Eye care, hearing, mental health? Yes, yes, yes. It's all going to be in. And, you know, so we have like that, the task force, universal healthcare, then Oregonians, bless their hearts. Thank you all the voters out there that voted for Measure 111, which made Oregon the first state in the union to create healthcare as a human right in our constitution, to add that language into our constitution. And then we got Senate Bill 1089 passed. So the Universal Health Plan Governance Board. And just with that, I mean, just been such an exciting past, like, you know, Mary, I said 10 years, and they're really just like the past 5-6 years, we've just been picking up steam. That got, that was passed. The people applied, a talented group of people, 9 members, 5 clinical, 4 non-clinical, and they got appointed by Governor Kotek in February, and they got Senate confirmed. And now there's an executive director that's going to like support them in leading their work. And then along the way, Healthcare for Oregon was able to hire the one, the only, Mary Beth Healy. And so, like, you know, we've got an executive director. So Healthcare for All Oregon is waving this flag and advocating it. We're supporting the Universal Health Plan Governance Board. We've got this awesome ED with years of organizing experience and executive director experience coming here to lead the charge at HCO. And Mary Beth, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add to that piece about where we're at today.
Well, and I do think that one of the most exciting aspects of the Universal Health Plan Governance Board is that, you know, we've seen a few task forces, you know, submit reports, you know, the blue ribbons, the, you know, and they sit, you know, they sit on a shelf somewhere in, you know, in the Capitol, right, and gather dust. And the exciting thing, I think, for Healthcare for All Oregon and all Oregonians, quite frankly, is the opportunity that we have to make sure that this governance board creates the plan that we want, right? So when we're out in the community talking to people, because here's one thing, Emma, everybody agrees that our current healthcare system is too expensive, it is dysfunctional, and it doesn't serve the needs of the people, right? There's our places of agreement, which is great to be able to move forward. But we don't know a lot of, we know what we want in values, but it is up to us as Oregonians to really get behind and make sure that that board creates the plan that we all want as Oregonians, because then, you know, they're going to submit their plan to the legislature for the 2028 session. And, you know, we want to make sure that we are prepared and that we have built the power to have the legislature pass that comprehensive plan that provides a healthcare system where everybody is in and nobody is out, or they don't. You know, and then we take it to the people, and the people will decide, just like we did that we wanted healthcare as a right, that we will decide we want a universal, equitable, and affordable healthcare system where nobody is out and everyone is in. So I just reversed it, Valdez, but, you know, there you go. So again, I think this just goes back to, it's a very exciting time, right? There's been a lot of fits and starts in this work, but Oregon is once again, as we have done throughout our history, leading the way, whether it's on healthcare, the, you know, public beaches, the bottle bill, you know, the Oregon Health Plan in and of itself was revolutionary around the country. And of course, it started here. Thank you, Dr. Kitzhaber. So we're in a great place, Emma, I think, but we're not done, because as Valdez started saying in the query from Rick, you've got all of these forces, the forces of profit, right, coming in to try to, you know, take over our healthcare system.
So where is Oregon's hospital system in crisis right now? Is it the rural hospitals like you were talking about? Is it the coordinated care organizations like Kaiser that went on strike last year? Who's at risk right now?
You know, I'll lead on that one. I was at a breakfast. I was invited to speak at the Portland Chamber type breakfast, the leadership cohort, December of 22, I think. And it was interesting because there was somebody from the Oregon Hospital Association there. And he was saying, even then in 22, you know, this was like, you know, COVID was still like, you know, right, you know, coming out of it. I feel like we're still coming out of it. So anyways, but he said, you know, success in 2023, back in the day, success for a hospital chain or a system was growth. It was expansion. It was adding new technology to compete, like Da Vinci surgical robots. And, you know, you're in that growth mode and trying to like distinguish yourself as the best, highest quality care, the best access times. That's kind of traditionally pre-COVID been the you know, the mindset and the mantra. What he said at that breakfast to the folks in the room was success in 2023 meant we didn't lose another hospital, that we didn't see a hospital closure. And then as 2023 played out and we saw the birthing center in Baker City, as we saw Legacy Mount Hood get threatened with a closure, as we saw things happening in Eugene and other acquisitions and decisions being made that like created geographic barriers for people having to drive farther, whether it's to deliver a baby or go to an ER. All these things really were playing out very heavily. That was kind of the theme in my mind of 2023. And so those were stark words. And I think I operate in two different kind of C3 spaces. One is Healthcare for Oregon and advocating for universal healthcare and these like transformative solutions that Mary Beth and I are talking about. But also I work with another group. It's kind of a learning professional society for healthcare execs. And so I have a lot of contact and access to folks that are in the C-suite, you know, as it were, in these groups. And I talk to them about, you know, these solutions, universal healthcare. Right now, the way I see it, the big choke point, I think a lot of times people think hospitals are out there getting rich on the care and stuff, and that's where the problem. That is not where the problem is. What happens is the hospitals are part and parcel now with insurance companies and the insurance plans. And so when you read these headlines about, you know, Legacy having to go hard against with their insurance provider, or Providence, you know, same thing, that's the problem. The insurance plans don't want to pay for the care that the hospitals are trying to provide to the patients. So I really don't see hospitals as the bad guy here. The insurance plans really have no place in healthcare. They're not involved in the healthcare decisions in any of these other countries in the world that we're talking about. They're the reasons why we're paying. When I was in grad school 10 years ago, 13 years ago, it was 18% of GDP. Now it's 19%. They're the reasons why there's all this these expenses. And then don't forget big pharma. You know, they charge a, you know, arm and a leg for medications that cost nickels and dimes in other countries because they can't. And so basically the hospitals are getting squeezed by the insurance payers, you know, the commercial payer mix. There's different mixes. There's like Medicare, Medicaid, commercial payer. And so they're not able to get the, you know, it's tough getting reimbursement rates on Medicare, Medicaid, but it's, you know, in the commercial payer mix, but the insurance plans, you know, the Affordable Care Act did wonders. It really did go from this old school model of fee for service where your doctor could just prescribe and prescribe and prescribe and bring you back. And they could do all these procedures on you just because they could, and they would charge you up the wazoo for it. It really did move it to where we need to do what's best, and there needs to be a value, right? It needs to be worth the patient. We need to keep them safe. We need to keep them healthy. We need to keep them from coming back. And that was kind of a big part of the Affordable Care Act. The insurance plans, just like they do, have found a way to exploit that. And so now what they do is they nitpick the heck out of the providers and the hospitals and the documentation and try to find reasons why it was not good care so they don't have to pay for it. And then that ends up being care that the hospitals don't get reimbursed for, but they're still going to provide their care anyway. They're still providing. So it's just a lot of it is the reimbursement with the insurance plans getting in the way of good care happening. If we just had, you know, in the healthcare world, the way they teach in grad school is FIDP. There's one person that finances the care. There's the insurer that, you know, is involved in it, then the delivery, right? Insurance is before that. And then the person that actually pays it out. If we just got it to where Oregon had all the money in the pot and was paying the hospitals and the providers and the clinics to provide the care to the patients, get that the insurance out of there, that would solve a lot of these problems of them getting squeezed, so to speak. But right now they have the power. The insurance company and Big Pharma have the power. And I'll say one last thing before I hand it off to my colleague. You know, I worked at the VA for many years. a beautiful aspect of the VA, and we're not talking about VA for all. That'd be like England and the National Health Service. You know, we're talking about provider choice. You'd be able to go see what doctor you want, kind of a Canada style model. But at the VA, though, there's one formulary. The formulary is, you know, your menu of all the drugs you can, you know, buy and prescribe to your patients. And the VA, or they negotiate with Big Pharma on that scale. The VA is all across the land, from Maine to Manila even. And so the VA gets the best prices in the U.S. for medicine, because if Big Pharma doesn't want to pay that price, the VA will say, all right, well, then I won't do business with you. And they've just lost a huge swath of business. So the VA has that bargaining power, that negotiating power. It's kind of like collective bargaining. They have that negotiating power to get the good prices. State of Oregon could have that kind of power if we were in a single payer system, and they would be able to rein in some of those big pharma costs. But I'll hand it off to Mary Beth. Anything I missed there, Mary Beth?
No, but I think actually when talking about negotiating power as it relates to prescription drugs, Oregon actually does have the Oregon, well, used to be called the Oregon Prescription Drug Program. It's now called Array RX. And this, you know, for any listener who struggles with paying for their pharmaceuticals, really check out ArrayRx. I think it's arrayrx.org. But if you Google the Oregon Prescription Drug Program, it will come up. And this entity was formed back in those early double aughts, Emma, that I was talking about, when there were reforms done on cost, access, and accountability. And it did create basically a PBM, or a negotiating tool, that the state of Oregon had for Oregonians who, at that point, you know, very small group of folks who couldn't, you know, who are 54 years or older, at or above a certain federal poverty line, et cetera, et cetera. And so that was like in 2003. And it really significantly helped patients, even though it was teeny at the time. And I remember this one couple in particular. They lived out in Washington County, and Mike had throat cancer, and you know, he had to